Well, God helps those who help themselves. Now, this floor is not going to clean itself. You can't make an omelet without breaking eggs. A stitch in time saves nine. Lead, follow, or get out of the way. The time to act is now. Most of us in this culture are programmed to be doers. If you want to achieve, you need to do. We tend to take this worldly logic over into our spiritual lives often as well. After all, we Swedenborgians place a very high emphasis on being useful, on serving through uses. The story of Martha and Mary appears to crash headlong into this logic. In this regard, it is perhaps one of the most unsettling stories in the Bible. I remember my friend Catherine telling me years ago that the one story in the Bible that really got up her nose was the story of Martha and Mary. I think she saw herself in Martha, empathized with Martha, felt the urgent cares of Martha, carried the burdens of Martha. And not only is Martha not thanked for all her hard work, but she is rebuked. Her sister, who hasn't lifted a finger, is praised. Catherine proclaimed this gospel tale to be intensely irritating. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of us don't identify with Martha, and like Catherine, are a little proud of it. In our society, people will sometimes cleverly refer to themselves as a workaholic in an apparent self-criticism, but really as a way of boasting. Because it is good to be the tireless worker in our culture, the doer, the achiever. In today's world, people put Donald Trump in the place of Jesus. And in the Gospel according to Donald, he says, "Martha, Martha, how ceaselessly you produce. Mary, you're fired." In the most recent period of Christian history, the past 50 years or so, it has been made increasingly clear through better historical analysis of the ancient Near East that in the Gospels, Jesus broke molds of social roles for women. That Jesus was a feminist, if you want to put it that way. And the earliest church women played rather revolutionary roles in the earliest church. So interest in the Martha and Mary account in recent times has highlighted the angle that the main problem, the main piece of friction happening in the story between Martha and Mary wasn't the workload that Martha had in the kitchen. The real problem was Mary was breaking boundaries. She was behaving as if she were a man. She should get back in the women's quarters where she belonged. It was a scandalous thing to be sitting there at the feet of a rabbi, because to be sitting at the feet of a rabbi meant you were a student, and to be a student meant that you wanted to be a rabbi. So Mary has come to stand for the transformative social vision inherent in the gospel's realm of God. And we can say a loud amen to that. We have been able to reclaim this power in our own times, which the vast majority of Christian history promptly forgot or neglected. And in many, many places, the way that the church works and moves today has been transformed and will never be the same again. So the gospel brings the male and female complementary strengths together. But going back much farther in history than our present generation and the one before it, back to the 3rd century, the story of Martha and Mary had a very symbolic role for the foundation of the monastic tradition. Down the centuries since then, women and men in religious orders have employed the story of Martha and Mary to picture spiritual types, the type of the active life and the type of the contemplative life, interpreting Jesus' words to be a very clear judgment in favor of the contemplative life. Understood in this way, we can take something from that, even if we're not in a religious order. The story offers us something important along this axis for our times and this culture of nonstop activity, namely that prayer and contemplation on the motifs of Christianity can provide a very deep structure into which we can grow and interpret and situate the busyness of our lives for our fuller spiritual formation. The late great philosopher of world myths, Joseph Campbell, once said that the great majority of his friends lived wasteland lives. Many, he said, were just wandering in the wasteland without any sense of where the water is, the source of what makes things green. They had no sense of where to find the source for a fruitful life, nourishment for the soul, and for wholeness. Campbell was a man who spent a brilliant lifetime studying the religions of the world and how they nurtured people. And he found a lack of this nurturing quality in modern society. We're living in a world that keeps us so busy and distracted that we're not getting nurtured. We're not experiencing, in the normal rounds of our cultural life, refreshment and rejuvenation. At the heart of Jesus' reply to Martha are these words: "You are worried and distracted about many things. There is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part." An image of our anxious, distracted society comes from a story told by Gandhi's nurse, Ramda. Ramda was the person who took care of Gandhi as a young boy. One of the things that they often did that Gandhi enjoyed so much during a certain part of his boyhood was to go to the bazaar, the processions from certain times of the year in the town's bazaar, as elephants would come leading the procession, ambling among the streets, around shops and vendors. And their trunks would be swinging very restlessly, looking for things. They would dip into stalls and grab bananas and look for coconuts. And to settle the elephants down, each elephant was finally given a bamboo stick around which it could curl its trunk, hold on to it. The moment that the trunk wrapped itself around the bamboo stick, the elephant settled down. There was no more restlessness, no more pilfering. The elephants would walk through the narrow, crowded streets, now with their heads held high, uninterested in coconuts and bananas. Ramda taught the child Gandhi, "Your mind is very much like that elephant's trunk. When you enter into meditation and prayer, this restlessness will fall away." And this image remained with Gandhi for the rest of his life. It was a metaphor for him in the way he brought his life of action and activity together with his contemplative life. So, will anybody ever make the case then for Martha? Because the fact is that many people are working 24/7 with very valuable and life-saving Martha-like contributions. And many of us in the church are sensitive to the basic demands that are laid on people who have so much responsibility, raising children, carrying difficult jobs with them, carrying the world. In some places, we tend to say that Martha represents one type of spirituality and Mary another. In the Episcopal Church, there is a very popular guild devoted to both prayer and action, bringing the two together, and it's called the Martha and Mary Guild. And for many years, there was a group in this parish, and I think a couple of you remember that there was a longtime group called the Marthas and the Marys, also to bring these two actions together in balance. Well, this modern interpretation to save Mary a little bit makes sense, as long as we don't examine the story too closely. Jesus did not commend Martha for her busyness. He did not say, "Martha, you're doing a good and holy thing by serving all of us, and it is just as important as what your sister Mary is doing." Instead, he said, "Mary has chosen the better part." what was Jesus comparing in the two sisters? Behavior? Contemplation? Action? Was he really making a comment either about the superiority of prayer and study over service? Or on the other hand, was he really saying that both are equally good and important? No. He was comparing Martha's stressed out, anxious, and manipulative behavior with the more relaxed and present behavior of her sister. Mary had chosen the better part because she was taking the opportunity to be there, to really be there. She was engaged with him and with others around. She wasn't trying to make anyone else behave in this way or that. She was present to this unique and wonderful situation in her own way. The story reminds us of how tempting it can be to let activities become little tyrants over our moods. Our minds become consumed with a list of things that must be accomplished. There's often a little tight knot in our stomach and a rush to get it all done because it all has to be done. It must get done. In our stress, we can forget to look to the deeper structures. We miss the opportunity to make a joke, to appreciate the moment. The Swedenborgian lens, I think, adds the proper correction on what is good in Mary and why, what is good in Martha and why Mary represents nevertheless a better place. Swedenborg, in Martha and Mary, also, like the ancient monastic world, sees two types of spirituality represented. What he calls natural love for God, represented in Martha, and what he calls a spiritual love for God, as represented by Mary. One isn't bad and the other good, nor are both equally good, but one rather leads to the other in the regeneration process. Natural love, says Swedenborg, is simply an earlier stage that we tend to need to go through in spiritual formation. It's when we are striving to know God better. We're striving to be a good person. We're making the effort. But in our natural love state, that effort focuses our attention back on ourselves. We're aware of our own effort, and our self is in the lens's focus. Martha is caught up in how much she is doing for God, and so she is focused within her self-effort. Mary, by sitting at the feet of God, shines forth as a representative emblem of a trust that is anchored in God. Mary doesn't stand for doing nothing, but for being centered in God in her doing. Which perhaps brings us to a final thought, a thread which binds together both of our Bible stories this morning, of Sarah and Abraham with those men whom we learn later in Genesis are angels, and of Martha, Mary, and Jesus. These two stories have been linked by lectionaries because they both deal on the surface with a sense of hospitality. The visit of the three men to Abraham and Sarah, the story of them entertaining angels unawares, is a story that might be told as a way of encouraging hospitality, because you never know when you have an angel for a guest. For at the center of Christian spirituality is something that might be thought of as an act of hospitality, not indeed of our hospitality to others, but of God's hospitality to us. See, Jesus invites us as the guests to a meal at which he is the host and also is the food which is served. In the light of that central fact, we can then see that these two stories as being strange reversals of the ordinary order. Jesus is a guest in the house of Martha and Mary, but it is he who does the feeding. Sarah and Abraham receive the three men and show their generosity to their guests, but the men are there to bring God's generosity to them. In the journey of our spiritual lives, it may seem that we do expend an awful lot of effort to serve God, to get things done in our spiritual programs, in our spiritual communities, only to grow, hopefully at long last, into a fuller discovery that it is always God serving us. Jesus wants us to develop a cloister of the heart, so to speak, a way of carrying a spiritual focus with us in whatever we are doing. Choosing the better part, then, is not really about finding a place in our life for God, so much as relaxing into God, finding our place in God, a place at God's feet, nourished by God's Word.